Are you ready to sell more books? I'm Brian Cohen.
And I'm Claire Taylor. If you're ready to get your books into the hands of the right readers
and make some more money,
you've come to the right podcast.
And now it's time to talk tips, tricks, and news to help you sell more of your books. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Sell More Book Show, episode 500. Oh, my goodness. We've made it to episode 500. I'm Brian Cohen from Best Page Forward, joined by Claire Taylor from FFS Media for her sunset episode, her final episode. Mm-hmm. Claire, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I feel like we did this right. This feels right, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think so too. I'm excited for you to go off to the new things you're going to be working on. And I am excited to announce in this episode what's coming next for the Sell More Book Show. But before that, Claire, let's put ourselves back in the headspace. It was about episode 300 or so.
I think it was exactly 300.
Yeah. Yeah. So you were on 200 episodes, which is a little over 3 years worth. It's almost 4 years worth. So 3.5, 4 years ago. What do you think? I mean, what has changed for you? I mean, a lot has changed in 3.5 years.
Yeah. I came on in January 2020, and a few things have changed since then.
Yep.
And
yep.
So it's been an interesting ride on the show to sort of, I mean, you and I, we like to feel out what the need is in the community. Yes. And cover stories that are associated with that. So we really have, I think, seen the need start to shift a little bit from more of a sprint to a marathon thinking.
Yes.
And so that has been really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, thinking about it, like even when me and Jim started the show 9+ years ago,
gosh,
it was about figuring out quick tips, finding quick things. But now it's almost like, okay, well, how can you better take care of your body for the marathon? How can you better take care of your brain for the marathon? It's really gone a lot more in that direction. And I certainly have you to thank for that, because you were a lot more in the headspace of, wait, we should take rest sometimes.
I know. And I know that's become kind of a joke that I'm always on one of my breaks. But yeah, I mean, I noticed that was something I was having to do, and I was kind of looking around and going, is anyone else this tired? Because y'all don't look this tired. And then people were like, no, we're this tired.
We're all tired.
So then it was like, okay. All right. To be fair, I think, you know, when you and Jim started the show, those little tricks could have, you know, each one of those could have been the spark that started a wildfire, because that was just the nature of, like, a good wildfire. That was just the nature.
One of those positive wildfires.
A controlled burn.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that was the nature of the industry at the time. It was like, you know, the tipping point was a lot easier to find for your books and for your career. And that's just, we've changed. It's much harder to get to that tipping point. It's usually not just one thing that takes you there.
Yeah, that is for sure. Then so, you know, the show has evolved and it will continue to evolve, I'm sure, by episode 1000, when it's totally being run by AI. And be non-controversial at all at that time.
The AI will be reminding us how to be human in an AI world.
Yeah, yes. 9 years from now, 18 years into the show. So, Claire, we're going to do something a little bit special today.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to be doing a super lightning round, and it is going to be all questions directed to you.
Great.
Because this is payback for me having to do the show without you.
Fair enough. No, this is interesting.
It's not payback. I want I want folks to make sure they get their double serving of you before we move on to different pastures in the future.
They're going to get a heaping dose of me. Big old pile of me on their plate today.
Big pile of you, and they'll be coming back for seconds.
And there won't be seconds.
Won't be seconds. Sorry. So, Claire, because it's the lightning round, we need some lightning sound effects.
Crackle, explosion, awe-inspiring displays.
That was my awe. I feel odd. So, Claire, starting off with number one of 10 questions a row. How has it felt connecting with Sellmore Book Show listeners these last 3.5 years?
It has been so great connecting with listeners at conferences and just through email and wherever. I am always so delighted and caught off guard. I'm like, oh, you listen to the show? I didn't think anyone was listening to the show. but also it's just really a nice way to connect with people. And the people that listen to this show are really interesting, cool people I've found. So it's been a pleasure. And I hope people will still come chat me up if they see me out and about, even once I'm gone.
Yeah.
And I'll give you the drama on the Sellmore Book Show, the real story.
Ooh, I can't wait for the Hollywood True Story. Hollywood True Story Sellmore
Book Show. Yeah. Why did Brian really spill that tea on his computer? What was he trying to get out of?
I was hiding the files
destroying evidence.
I know. Well, Claire, I feel the same way with connecting with listeners, and I do think that because the show has pivoted away from the tips, the speedy tips, I think that it means that the folks who are listening are in this for the long haul, and I definitely appreciate all the, you know, longevity advice that you've been giving these last 3.5 years.
Yeah, I hope it helps.
I am certain it will for the people who are interested in having it help them.
Yep. And for everyone else, forget I said it.
Yeah, exactly. So, Claire, number two, in those last 3.5 years, what are some good things that you think have happened for authors and for the author community in that time? So from January 2020 to now, what are some good things that you think have happened for authors and the community?
Oh, man. I think in the last 3.5 years, indie authors especially have gotten so much more respect as professionals. I think that the tide is turning. I think part of that is because traditionally published authors are going, hey, all the things that you think are promised with a trad pub deal aren't necessarily promised. So I think that that has changed a lot. I think that the mindset of indie authors has matured a lot. And there was sort of this childlike hope that you would just strike it big. And now we know that it requires work and it requires a lot more. And the people who are still in this are the ones who are willing to keep going and keep getting back up. And so I think that's really great. And I really admire that about so many people. And people are just getting serious about this, you know, in a, not like in a boring way, but realizing that like, hey, I think I do want to be in this for the long haul, even if I, you know, don't ever make the money that I had once dreamed of. It's worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. I love your thoughts on serious not being boring. And I just saw, I became friends with Matt Dinneman, lit RPG author in Seattle at a conference. And he's having, as we're recording this, like a $250,000 Kickstarter or something. And seeing his posts on Facebook, are like his dogs with like little caption bubbles out of their mouths. And I know he has a lot of like weird, crazy stuff in his books. Stuff that would have belonged on our previous podcast, to be honest. Uh-huh. And like he's doing serious business, but not in a boring way, because the man is freaking hilarious. And it shows that you can absolutely still have your personality and still be who you are. And that can still allow you to have fun as you mature, as you grow as a business. And I think you're absolutely right that we're seeing more and more authors do that. I think authors have to be, you know, make sure they're following their own path, not somebody else's path when they're doing that. But yeah, I mean, I think you absolutely nailed it.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I mean, this is the year of Barbie that we're in, right? Just yeah. Because something's fun and a little silly doesn't mean it's not serious and important. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. All right. The converse to that.
Oh boy.
Claire, what are some things that trouble you about like developments for authors and the community that have changed since January 2020?
I think what concerns me the most, as far as trends I've seen over the last 3.5 years, is that there's this decision point when things aren't working out for you the way that you'd hoped. You can try something new, or you can blame other people. And it may be that other people have some responsibility in why things aren't working out the way that you had hoped, but that takes it out of your control. And so really the thing that has frankly grossed me out the most is that the bitterness that I've seen from people who want to go out and cause drama and freak out and cause panic and blame other people and create rifts, rather than just like keeping your eyes on your own freaking test, you know, like don't look at everybody else. Don't blame other people. Like it's your responsibility to get to the place that you want to go. And so a lot of people are choosing to expend their frustration energy in ways that aren't moving them forward. And then it's a vicious cycle, because then they don't move forward and then they get more frustrated. And so I think that is really, it's become more pronounced as the market has tightened and things aren't as easy to get. And so, you know, when I see people out there blaming everyone else, trying to start these sort of almost like culture wars in the community, I just go the other way. I just, you know, there are a lot of emotions that people feel that are action emotions. They're calling you to take an action. And I don't think that the action is usually like just trying to take someone else's career down.
Yeah.
So yeah. That's something that I'm seeing happen more and more. And of course, it's a natural, you know, a natural occurrence because of the state of the industry. But I just hope that, you know, every person is capable of doing it. And when you feel the need to do it, I just hope that you are kind enough to take that energy and use it for yourself and fulfilling your dreams.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you and I both have the same kind of mentality as far as steering away from that drama, steering away from stirring stuff up. I think that's one of the reasons why we have a really interesting cross section of listeners. I don't think, you know, I think it's across any kind of spectrums of people, because we really do try to keep pretty neutral about things, and we try to look at them very objectively. Like, you know, with AI, which I made the joke of because it's controversial earlier in this episode, like we see people stressed about it and we see people excited about it, and we comment on it neutrally because we don't want to shortchange either side, the people who are nervous about it or the people who are excited about it. Because I do think some of the clamor around that is exactly what you're seeing or, and what you mentioned with the blaming. And so it is going to be interesting how that one develops. But hopefully, even though it is a natural growth of an industry, I do hope that we grow out of it.
Yeah. And I think you and I are neutral, not just because it like makes us feel good to be neutral, but I think that, you know, we're neutral because we can kind of see both sides and we don't think that one needs to like go away.
Yeah. Yeah. No, 100%. Absolutely. We're on to number four of this super lightning round. This is like chain lightning.
Yeah.
So rest and recovery have been big themes of your time on the show. How can authors force themselves, and I use that language very specifically, force themselves, because I know it's hard, to make rest and recovery a part of their weekly routines?
Man, it is so essential to have rest and recovery in your routine. And yeah, you will have to force yourself to do it for a little while, especially if you have narratives that you've built around productivity and worth. I think that is where people get caught up in constantly going, because if you associate your productivity with how much you're worth as a human being, then rest doesn't seem that appealing, right? Rest mm-hmm. is points off. So then you're like, oh, I'm not going to rest. So you want to address those kinds of feelings. What is it that you're telling yourself about you when you rest that makes it unappealing? Because rest is really nice. And now rest doesn't necessarily mean like just sleeping and staying in bed, sitting on the couch. There are different ways to rest. You know, when I talk about the Enneagram, there are ways that we can rest that will refill us by type. So if you're, you know, let's say you are a type four and you're feeling, you know, the individualist and you're feeling very tired, maybe you need a little bit more structure. So maybe rest for you looks like organizing your life a little bit more, right? Which is moving into that growth type of the one that the four moves into. So there are different ways that you rest. So sometimes rest looks like knocking out your to-do list outside of work. Sometimes it's doing a garden project. Sometimes it's going and taking your dog for a long walk. Sometimes it is just sitting and binging Netflix. Sometimes that is rest. So rest doesn't have to be inactive. And usually the best rest is some sort of proactive thing that gets you in a different pattern from your daily routine. And we just get tired of our own patterns. So I think that it's important to remember that that a lot of the reason that we don't want to rest is because it will make us feel some way about ourselves if we do. And then address that, because that's just a lie. Everything rests, right? Plants rest. All animals rest. You know, the earth rests. We're part of it. We have to rest too.
And the defense rests.
And the defense. Yeah, even defenses rest. Let your guard down. See?
Yeah. So I love this, Claire. I'm glad we talked about rest, because I think you've helped me to learn more about it and learn more about why it's so essential. And now I know to look in myself for the cues of, you know, stuff is starting to drop, things are starting to pile up, and always the instinct at that time has been to push through. But now I know that when I see those kind of cues happening, I know it's actually counterintuitive, but it's important to rest because that's what's going to help
get
things cleared up.
Yeah.
And I was just out of town for a thing that caused me to work on the weekends. And I said, okay, well, if I work on the weekends now, I have to take Monday off.
Mm-hmm.
And I did.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was so much better.
There are a lot of people who have been working 7 days a week in this for a long time. And I just go, ooh, can I like take you out for brunch or something? You know, like, can we just do something that's different? Because just being caught in those patterns can be so exhausting.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Yeah. I think people should give it a shot and not just once, because it's going to feel gross once. You give it a shot regularly, you commit to it, and then you'll start to be like, oh yeah, I am just like a person who gets to just exist.
It's weird that. It's pretty weird.
Yeah. It's wild.
So you brought up Enneagram in that answer. This is our Enneagram question. So how does an author's Enneagram type impact their path to achieving their author goals?
So the Enneagram type is built off of our core fear and core desire. You can just simplify that down to the core fear, because fear is a much more accessible emotion. We kind of generally know what scares us. So from that core fear, which defines which type you are, certain attentional patterns arise. These attentional patterns are where your emotions flow, where your thoughts flow, and where your energy and your sort of instincts and intuition flows, and how it flows and the amount that it flows. So it's attentional patterns is what the Enneagram talks about. So how do attentional patterns affect your author career? They affect it in all ways, unfortunately. There are some things that you will be told you need to do and they don't keep your attention. And those are going to be the things where you're going to be wasting the most energy trying to keep your attention on them because you do not care. Meanwhile, there are going to be some things that really hold your attention, and those are going to be the easiest things for you to do. So if you have, say you're an Enneagram 7, the enthusiast, and your core fear is being trapped in pain or deprivation, you spent your whole life focusing your attentional patterns on where is the pleasure, where is the fun, where's the good time, where's the positivity, you know, looking for that sort of thing. So if someone comes and tells you to just sit down and just force through the not fun parts and just do those, you haven't developed that part, those mechanisms throughout your life naturally. Maybe you have developed some coping mechanisms, because a lot of sevens have to, because they're told off for not being focused enough, for, you know, that sort of thing. Generally, those coping mechanisms aren't super healthy. So that's a whole other thing to deal with. But what you want to do if say you're a seven is say, well, where are the fun parts for me? What is novel? Where can I find novelty in the familiar and bring my enthusiasm to that? Because that's already where your energy's going, and your gift is finding what's fun. So bringing that to your readers is going to feel good to you, and your goals should be aligned with that instead of, you know, I'm going to make sure that I'm going to be a super serious, you know, just standard writer who writes in one pen name, 20 books all the way through, you know, or I'm going to write a 50 book series because that's the most strategic thing to do. That's not going to work, because that's a very painful experience writing that many books in the same series. So there's a lot of variation based on where your attention goes. And so that's what I tell people about is, where's your attention automatically going? And let's find tasks and build a strategy that works with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's the swimming upstream versus letting the waters carry you, right? You might as well go with the path of least resistance, at least the majority of the time. Of course, we're going to have to do things that go against our core essence sometimes, because that's life. But if you're going against your core motivations 100% of the time, and you wonder why life is such a struggle for you, I have learned through listening to you and through studying some of these things myself, your life's going to suck.
Yeah, you're just not going to reach the success you want. And the thing is, you know, when you are doing that, you are already successful. When you are doing the thing that you are, that comes naturally to you, that is kind of your calling, and you're using the gift that your attentional patterns have given you, you are already winning every day. You are a success every day. There's no waiting for a goal. There's no hoping it'll come around. It's already there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's for sure. That is for sure. All right, we're halfway through our super lightning round. Claire, I'm used to talking half the time, so I'm like getting all sleepy over here. Now you
got to sing. Oh, no.
I know, I do need to sing. Claire! Okay, so number six. How could an author adopt a new habit of reading in their genre to improve their craft?
Hoo boy.
I know. It's a tough one. We've talked about this before. You have been quoted as saying, if you don't have time to read, you don't have time to write. And I have quoted you multiple times in any webinars related to writing the market good. Or yeah. anything. Because I after you said that, I was like, well, of course.
Right. Yeah. You need input to have output. And people need different kinds of input or different levels of input for each output. But okay, how do you adopt a new habit of reading to your genre? Well, it can help to put the time on your calendar, because stuff that's like this open-ended kind of tasks, they tend to fall to the wayside the quickest.
Yeah.
You can put some mechanisms into place on your phone that don't allow you to get on social media. And if you are unsure what I mean, go look at your screen time. I mean, I know. Hey, and guilty as well here.
Right.
But if you want to read more, get that out of your life, because that the social media is not what you need for this particular input. You're not getting the input to write books from social media as much as you are from reading books. Now, you can pick up some things from social media. There is some interesting inspiration on there. But you're kind of at the whim of whatever the algorithm gives to you, whereas you are in control when you pick up a book and read it. So reading that, audiobooks count. I think that's important.
Yep.
If you don't have time, but you are driving your kids around a lot, and presumably, you know, you're not writing in a genre that's not kid appropriate. Or you're just, you know, when you go to the gym, anything, audiobooks are a great way to do it. And you can listen to it. You cannot listen to it. You can kind of tune in and out, because not all books in the genre you're writing are going to appeal to you, because people don't really have a genre that appeals to them. It's tropes and it's themes that are common in the genre. So it's also okay to, when you're reading a book, if it's really bad, in your opinion, you can put it down, pick up a new one. Yep, we love the DNF pile. So, yeah. So those are some tips, but just don't expect there to be time. Make time. It's a business expense. It's a business investment, reading these. So I think that's very important.
As you pointed out, it's a business expense, so you can write off. I'm not an accountant, but you can write off things that help you grow your business. And if reading helps you grow your business, then I would say that's a write-off.
Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, it's useful. And it's what investing back into your business looks like.
Well said. Well said. Claire, women deserve to feel safe during author conferences and events. Mm-hmm. What do you think is one major step, and we know that many steps may need to be taken, but what do you think is one major step these events can take to help this happen?
Okay, so this question relates to the post that I made maybe a year and a half ago, something like that, mm-hmm. about this mm-hmm. problem. So I do want to say that yes, women deserve to feel safe at author conferences and events. But I think you also look around at a lot of these events and you will notice that the racial demographics of the events do not reflect the racial demographics of the regions. They are a little bit white. And so I think there's also a problem. That's how you can diagnose that probably a lot of like authors of color do not feel welcome there as well, or do not feel like that space is for them. So I think this problem is more than just women, but I will talk about women because that's the question. So when I look at some of these events, and I just want to say, I'm not talking about a specific event, y'all. It's a lot of events. If you want to scapegoat one event in your mind, you can do that. But that's kind of beside the point. So the problems with these events aren't that there aren't enough steps in place for a woman to report something. So it's not a procedural issue, as far as I've seen, because I've had the procedures, you know, recited to me over and over again in reassuring me that there can't be a problem because there are procedures. And it's like, oh, but there are still problems. So the problem is not structural, it's not procedural, it's cultural. And it's a culture where if something happens to a woman and she reports it, the culture is that she is not necessarily believed, or if the person that she has reported on is powerful in that culture, in that place, she is threatened if she speaks. And that's something that happens, actually happens. I know about it happening. So
I also know about it happening, yes, for what it's worth. Thank you. I need to put my two cents in on that, but I have also heard about this happening.
So I appreciate your credibility, you throwing that in. I really do appreciate it. That's allyship, Brian. so the problem, so here's the thing. Women existing in the world run into these things. It's not a safe world for us. We run into these things. We're used to having these encounters. So it's not that we expect them to never happen. The real upset comes from when you try and report it and nothing happens, because that shakes your feeling that there could be justice in this world and that anything could improve and that you could be safe in the future, or that if something happens, you'll be met with the proper response. So anyway, it's not procedural, it's cultural. So back to what is one major step that these events can take to help this happen? Well, we know that the culture is set by the people at the top. So the one step that could be taken to sort of prevent the predators and the creeps is for these events to not be run by predators and creeps. That's what needs to happen. And until that happens, it's not going to change.
Makes total sense. Yeah. No, I really wanted to make sure, we both wanted to make sure this question was asked, because until something changes, it will continue to happen, and we need to make sure that it does not.
Yeah, and the thing that I've seen change, which is good, is the awareness of the problem. And I've seen, and this is just the nature of it, is that if you are not the one who is being affected directly by this problem, it's unlikely that you're going to notice it, right?
Yes.
So I think there are a lot more men who are noticing this. And it has taken some of the burden off of women to protect each other and watch out for both themselves and the people around them. I think that's good. I think the discussion has improved. I think there are some people who genuinely are trying to make this no longer an issue, but they have not put in the work. They don't know what they're doing. So anyone who is assuring you that, oh, it won't happen here, they don't understand what they're talking about, because it happens everywhere. It happens less in places where people don't believe they'll get away with it. But it's never going to be a zero number. You know, if it is, it's just a fluke. So it's not about, if someone's saying it doesn't happen here, this is a safe place for you, don't believe the hype. They should be saying, if it does happen to you, you will be believed here. We will take the necessary steps and we will make sure that you are okay afterward.
Yeah.
That's it. You know, oh, it's not going to happen here. This is not that place. We put the right procedures in place. So it's you know, totally safe. I wish this Claire woman would just shut her mouth.
We underlined this one, so we know it's important.
We have random people you can report to that you don't know and trust, so it's all good.
Oh, goodness. Well, thank you, Claire.
There's my cynicism for the day.
Yeah, no, we needed some. Thank you. Thank you for talking about that more. I do appreciate it.
Oh, I can keep talking.
A lot of people appreciate it. I know. You had said when I sent these to you, you were like, I could talk for an hour about each of them. Mm-hmm. So,
I'm trying to keep it concise. Sorry, y'all. No, I'll get out of here. No, you'll never have to hear from me again after this.
Get out. All right. Three more. Number eight. And this is actually, this has parallels to a question we asked in last week's episode, but authors worry that if they make writing a full-time job, they'll grow to hate it. How do authors keep this from happening?
Yeah. So if you're worried that you'll hate being an author once it's your full-time job, there's always the option of not making it your full-time job. So that is, that is always on the table.
Yeah.
And realistically, there are some people who would just probably hate it if they made it their full-time job because it's too much pressure. And then that pressure turns into a lot of different emotions that attach themselves to the experience and are really hard to get off. It's not impossible. It's not like you can't, you know, do some sort of reprogramming of your thought patterns and that sort of thing. But that might take some time. So I think that, you know, if you start to hate it, you might look at how much of your life it's taking up, because even your full-time job shouldn't be your whole life.
Yeah.
If you say, okay, I'm a full-time author and I'm working 60 hours a week, when people get on a call with me and say that, I'm like, okay, well, let's address that first. Because honestly, like if 100% of your identity is wrapped up in being an author, then when something goes wrong in your author business, 100% of your life is in an upheaval. Whereas if only 30% of your life, let's say, or your identity is wrapped up in being an author, then when something goes wrong in your author business, you can just leave and go be the other identities for a while and not think about it. So you have refuge from that. And that actually helps you make better decisions for your business because it's not so... It doesn't, you know, immediately put you into a complete life upheaval anytime one little thing goes wrong. So it's just, you know, in the end, it's strategic to have other parts of your life make up your identity and who you think of yourself as. So that is one thing you can do when you are becoming full-time is make sure that you have other things going in your life. So when things inevitably go wrong, when you're struggling with your manuscript, or when a launch bombs, or when you get a really bad review, you have somewhere else to be. And, you know, it's not 100% of who you are that's under attack.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like that because hobbies, friendships, family. I've been reading a book by my friend Jada Selner called She Builds, and it talks about the anti-hustle culture. And she talks about how she used to, like, you know, her kid was like, mommy, why are you making that face? And she's like, what face? And it's like hunched over a laptop like this. And she would, Jada would explain it away saying, oh, it's my money-making face. And it's like, she realized not healthy when you're like, hunched over and trying to get all the words in. And that's all you focus on. You miss out on life.
Yeah. And the thing is, most of us are doing this because we hope to reach this point where everything will be easy and then we can go enjoy our life the way we want it to.
Mm-hmm.
That it'll give us this feeling. If we just hit this arbitrary goal, then we'll somehow acquire this feeling that we haven't been practicing for. We have not been building the pathways for that feeling in our life. But suddenly it's going to appear and it's going to be forever. And then you miss out on it and maybe you hit that goal and you just don't feel the way you thought because you need to build that. You need to cultivate that feeling in your life every single day. And when you do that, the writing will just not be as important, like the outcomes of the writing. You may still enjoy the writing, but the outcomes is where the frustration can come in.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, Glad we're getting all of this out of the system here, Claire, so that we gotta mine all of these value gems from your brain.
I'm not gonna talk for the rest of the week after this.
I know.
Just a catatonic state.
Ooh, exciting! I'll have someone bring you some soup.
Thanks.
So, sure. Two more left, and then you're gone.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. Claire Taylor. So this is more of a personal question. I'm certainly interested what your thoughts are on this. If everything goes as planned, where would you like to be with your author and teaching career 5 years from now in 2028? If it goes kind of your goals, they keep getting achieved, where would you like to be at that time?
This is such a difficult question for me, and I had to think about this.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't really set long-term goals anymore. I used to. But now, like, what I'm doing right now with my writing and with my Enneagram teaching and coaching and consulting, I just enjoy it all so much, and I'm just so happy to be doing it that I would be okay if I felt this same way in 2028 about it. So yeah. I just like to sort of make sure that the projects that I'm doing are feeding me and are valuable to others in ways that matter to me. And then I get to sort of look up every now and then and be like, oh, look at this delightful surprise of results. Like, oh, yeah. Look at this opportunity. I was not expecting this, but let me see. Yeah, this is good for me. Or, oh, that's an interesting opportunity. I don't think it's right for me right now. And just kind of, I get to be a little bit clueless about the future and just sort of plod along with the things that are working right now and see what comes up, because I don't need to worry about, you know, 2028. I mean, first of all,
yeah.
God only knows what's going to be happening in the world that far ahead.
Yeah.
If the time between when I started this show in January 2020 and now has taught us anything, it's that long-term planning, it can feel good in the moment, but ultimately we have no clue. So, yeah, I just focus on what feels right in the moment. And I, you know, that's kind of how I've gotten to where I am. And I had no idea that this is where I would be. And I just, I'm happy to see what develops from things. And I really do believe that, you know, anyone who just does the things that they enjoy, that they're good at, and that are valuable, will keep finding themselves in places that they enjoy.
Yeah. I really like that. I think that, you know, I couldn't offhand tell you the answer to that question either. I think that if you keep focusing on trying to cultivate more joy in your life and do the projects that bring you joy, the funny thing is, I think it ends up benefiting the bottom line as well. But if you're focused entirely on benefiting the bottom line, you end up with lower sales and less joy, which is a real crappy combo.
Yeah, it for sure is. And, you know, and I say this and I know I sound a little bit Pollyanna-ish, but you can't not focus on the money. You can't just ignore the money. The money is important.
Yeah.
But, it, you know, learn what is enough. And so that you can recognize when you have enough and then you don't keep making decisions, because a lot of the times people will say, okay, I'm going to sacrifice what I want to do just for the short-term project. And then it pays off big. And then it's like, well, if that paid off big from doing it for 2 months, imagine if I did it for the next year, right? So so that is that sort of greed setting in and the, like, you know,
yeah,
oh, one is good, 10 is better. And that's really the trap that a lot of people were falling into back in, you know, 2019, 2020 in this industry. And that led people to be very successful in ways that they hated. So we don't want to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the way you put that. Well, we're down to The final question, the final
countdown,
lightning of the final one here, and I just gotta say, even before this, and we'll do a question of the week as well, but even before this, Claire, it's been an honor.
Oh.
200 episodes doing this show. I feel like we were already friends beforehand. It's been great getting to deepen our friendship and getting to have these moments together on the show. If we had a bigger budget, we'd throw together a highlight reel to like all by myself or something. And yeah, but we don't. And so we're not, but, I feel like I've learned a lot working with you, and I've grown as a result of you, and I'm glad we're still friends after this, because we'll still get to chat, but I will miss getting to have this regular opportunity to share things with the author community with you, and so thank you for being interested when I said, hey, would you be interested back 200 episodes ago?
Oh, thanks, Brian. Yeah, this has just been such a great opportunity. I'm just really glad that you offered it to me. And at the time I was like, me? What do I have to say? But it turns out I can't shut up. So that worked out okay. But yeah, I mean, it has been really nice. I know just from like, just in a friendship way, it's nice to see you every week. There are a lot of shady folks in the industry. And I think you're one of the very few people who I just trust to be open and honest with, and trust that you are doing what you do out of the genuine goodness of your heart. So it's been easy to be on here for 200 episodes with you.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that. Can I make it through this last one? So number 10. What is one last hot potato of wisdom you want to leave our listeners with here in your last episode? I put in parentheses for now, because of course we'll want to have you back as a guest as often as we can.
Okay, so my final hot potato, it's a good one. It's a good one. I hope. as I think of what it is. I would say that the thing that I want to leave people with is that when you are publishing independently, and even if you're currently traditionally publishing, the only person who can stop you from writing is you. And so all the other stuff is noise. Your main focus is to keep finding ways to enjoy writing, to connect with the writing, and connect with the part of yourself that thrives from writing. So one of my favorite quotes, and I'm going to paraphrase this a little bit, but it's from George Saunders, who is a fantastic short story writer and author, but I love his short stories. And he's a professor. You would think he's very pretentious, but he's not. He's wonderful. And his advice is, the job of the writer is to get the reader to the next sentence, and then to the next sentence, and so on. And that is our only real responsibility, is to get our readers to the next sentence. And so that is like the fundamental building block of this. And so if you get lost in all of the, all the razzle dazzle of what you could be doing, it can be really nice to just return to your manuscript and say, how do I get them to the next sentence? And then the next. And that is the most granular form of what we're doing. And so just keep going to the next sentence and just keep bringing your readers along, and you will find a way. There is nothing that can stop you now with the internet. There are no gatekeepers that can keep you down forever. You can always write, and you can always deliver it to people who need it.
Love it. No further questions, Your Honor.
Ooh, yes.
I love that. I love that so much, because I was at the business mastermind I was at just recently. My mentor, Pat Flynn, said, What would this look like if it was simple? And I loved that question so much because we do try to overcomplicate things, and it feels like Saunders' quote is in that direction. What would it look like if your author career and all that you're striving for was just simplified?
Yeah.
And I think we could all take a cue from you there on that one, Claire.
And from George Saunders. He's very smart. He's much, from smart. George He's Saunders, much smarter than me. 10th of December is a work of genius.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Good. One last plug there. So before we roll out here, I'm just going to take the question of the week here and say, what will you miss most about Claire on the Sell More Book Show?
This is going to embarrass me so much.
I can't wait. So you can answer that question of the week over at sellmorebookshow.com or the Sell More Book Show After Party Facebook group. There have been questions about what's going to happen to the show after this. The rest of 2023 has been figured out. We will be having rotating guest co-hosts who will do 2 episodes in a row. And so our first guest co-host coming up after this one in episode 501 is Inez Johnson.
Ooh.
Wonderful, brilliant writer and former TV screenwriter and just an all-around superstar woman, followed by Jennifer Hilt of the Trope Thesaurus, who is a wonderful and so kind. And we will be having a couple more folks. Courtney Kenny, book launcher of the stars. And then we will be closing out the year with Becca Syme.
We got
a lot of cool people coming up and trying to fill those shoes that you left for us, Claire. And we will do our best to live up to it.
Oh boy, no, you've already done it. I can't wait for those episodes.
Yay. Cool. Awesome. Claire, for the last time until you guest co-host at some point in the future, where can our wonderful Sell More Book Show listeners find you?
FFS.media is where all of my stuff lives. My fiction, my nonfiction, my consulting, my email list. It's all there. FFFFF. Which I've wanted to say on the show what it means, and I can't. But FFS.media. Go see me.
Well, you'll see Claire there.
And you will hear words come out of my mouth through that content that you have never heard on the show.
This is true. We've bleeped every single one. No, I don't think we have the technology to do that. So
just dub it over. Heard to.
Yeah.
Fudge.
Frick. mother forking snakes on this.
Son of a bunchy.
Oh my goodness. Well, Claire, I think we've made this a supersized episode, like the episodes of yore. I hope that people appreciate it, and definitely, you know, feel free to go leave a review and say some good things about Claire on Apple Podcasts. I guess I'll have to remember and figure out how to change those kind of things so it just says my name there, but I don't know. We'll figure it out.
Brian and Friend.
Brian and Friend and a new theme song. I'm going to have to go figure that out. I know.
Sorry about that.
At some point. Oh, no. It's fine. I do enjoy that stuff. It's just a matter of, wait, where is that going on my to-do list?
Oh,
we'll get
yeah.
it all figured before episode 501.
Yep. I hope y'all enjoyed our theme song while it lasted.
I love our theme song. I haven't listened to it in a while.
It's fun. It's a fun, uplifting thing.
Yeah. Well, I will say this for the last time for a while, for now. But for Claire Taylor of FFS Media.
May she rest in peace.
May she rest in peace. RIP Media. For Claire Taylor, I'm Brian Cohen. Have a great week of bookselling, everybody. And the show will be back for episode 501 next week. Please don't leave forever. to the listeners and to Claire. But please don't leave forever. We'll have Inez Johnson here for our next episode, and it should be great. Talk to y'all next week, and have a great week of bookselling. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Sell More Book Show. Visit the website at www.sellmorebookshow.com for detailed show notes and subscription information, or to send us news or comments for use on the show. Also, please take a moment to subscribe to the show and leave us a review. Thank you very much for listening, and happy bookselling!